Welcome to the Fit2 Talk podcast.
You just found the number one health and fitness podcast for performers, and thank you as always for joining us as we bring you meaningful, helpful, and accurate information and
remind you that fitness doesn't have to be boring.
Right now you're listening to one of our talk episodes during which Bobby and I talk about stuff.
Yes.
And if you like what we do, then please leave us a review.
Yeah, go on, do it. Go on. Pause it. Leave that review. And you're back.
Five stars.
Okay, thank you. Five stars, thanks. On that note, let's cue the music.
It's Fit to Talk.
Ah, it's nice, that music. It's good, isn't it?
Does it take you back to when you composed it?
Yeah, I was in my bathroom. I just washed my hands.
Good. Good.
And I went,
cleanliness important.
I went, I've got it.
I've got it.
And I was on the piano app on my iPhone. And then I was like playing that out. And I was like, obviously the rhythm was awful because it's... And I ran to get my, at the time, iPad, which still functioned, nice, to record that. Yeah. And then obviously the wonderful Matt Knowlton managed to arrange it and turn it into something actually good.
Ah, sweet memories.
Not bad. Not bad memories.
No.
Good ones.
Lovely.
Joke, just start off.
Go on.
Well, the first half of a joke.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Right. What's the difference between light and hard?
I don't know.
We'll find out at the end.
I have no idea where this joke's going to go. I'm intrigued.
We will find out at the end.
Look at us all casual right now.
I know, we rarely do talk episodes in our own clothes. It's we'll level with you. It's because I forgot my Fit2 top. Well, my Fit2 top, like we don't have eight of them.
Yeah, so many. I found an OG Fit2 top the other day.
The black and white
ones? Yeah, yeah.
With the like terrible original logo.
Oh, no. See, I love the original. I've got a lot of love for the original logo.
It's its own thing.
Yeah, I found one in my wardrobe. I was like, oh, I won't be wearing that anytime soon.
I feel like I can hate on the original because I did it, and that's why it looks garbage. But we're very grateful that people stuck with us through the difficult times.
It's like our adolescence.
The difficult logo times. I was reading a study the other day, yeah, and I actually, this is making me sound smarter than I am. I was only reading the study because I saw a thing about it on social media.
Yeah.
Full transparency.
I mean, that is one good thing about social media, is you do get to like get exposure to studies that you may not have thought about reading.
Yeah, if people should follow, there's a bunch of accounts you should follow, but there's a psychologist I love called Adam Grant that people will know from a bunch of the books that he's written, and quite often things come up. Or if you're looking for stuff about fitness and training, then there's a bunch. Obviously, there's Brad Schoenfeld, I can't say his second name, Schoenfeld or whatever it might be.
I like Lane Norton. I'm always a big fan of Lane Norton.
Great information. Mm. Difficult to consume for a normal person, I would suggest.
Yeah, he's not necessarily the greatest at like boiling it down to what it means in just general terms. Yeah. It's still quite like
it's very advanced.
Yeah, it's advanced. But he's great, like, and I respect a lot of his views. So actually, I'm a big fan of Lewis.
Yeah, huge. I think he's fantastic. Mm. Well, he's incredible.
Yeah,
I think it's rather unpalatable for most.
Yeah. Even sometimes I'm like, ooh, I'm just going to need to swipe away
all
and watch some French Bulldogs for a second.
That's all you need. But the study I actually hit on was one that said, and it was attention grabbing, saying that male aggression was reduced by the pheromones, supposedly, in women's tears.
Oh.
So there is a biological reason as to why women cry when faced with threatening situations.
Wow.
And this wasn't like, this was from a good... let me find out who actually did it. Here we go. The Weizmann Institute of Science in Israel. Yeah. So fairly well respected from what I could find out about them looking through, and from what I can find out about the study, it holds up pretty well. And the paper basically suggests that a fundamental reason why women shed emotional tears is to convey a chemical signal that lowers aggression. So it's a shared mechanism of many mammals, because apparently it happens, they started this study because they discovered that it was true in rats.
Okay.
Not rats. Now the mole rats and various other creatures go so far as to cover themselves in their tears to chemically deflect aggression. But humans, like, it turns out we communicate quite a lot with body odors in a way that I had no idea about.
Tell me more.
Which was nuts. There's a few problems with it in general, but not really in the sense of what they discovered.
Yeah.
But it's about 44% lower aggression in the men.
How did they measure it? I mean, I'm intrigued by like
the researchers gathered data from 25 male volunteers who played a game in the lab that is often used in studies of aggression. So it's been used for that reason before. Okay. It hasn't been devised for this, which I think is a positive.
Yeah, I think that's important. Otherwise, you could be accused of like creating it so that it
might
led to bias, the answer. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, they were led to believe that their opponent was another person.
Yep.
But it was actually a computer algorithm.
Okay.
Right. And occasionally that fictional opponent would steal money from the participants, who could then either choose to take revenge with no monetary gain for themselves, right? Or let their opponent get away with it, but continue collecting more money for themselves.
Right.
So the researchers then like calculated aggressiveness by the number of times a participant chose revenge, divided by the number of times they were provoked.
Fine.
So you get an overall score based on whether it's in response. So an actual aggression response rather than just their natural tendencies.
Yeah.
And then they repeated it again with another group of like 26 volunteers that time. And they did that within an MRI machine.
Okay. Fine. That makes
sense. So scanning their brain activity to go, right, where was that? Where was that thing? They played the game twice. They were asked to inhale from a sniff jar, which they were told contained assorted odors, and it either had female tears or a saline solution.
So I'm just imagining somebody collecting the female tears. If you could just cry into this beaker, please.
They apparently had quite a bit of trouble actually collecting the tears. A fair number of the women that volunteered were unable to produce enough tears to be used in the study. So that was actually a problem that they came up with. They were like,
I want to know how they got the tears to flow.
Yeah, pain? I don't know. Like, who knows? And
watching
then,
The Notebook? I don't know.
That would work. Marley and Me.
Marley and Me would get me.
The end.
You could get no end of tears for
That's
me.
That's it,
Marley
isn't it? And me. And they found that they were nearly 44% less aggressive in the game than when they sniffed the saline solution.
Wow.
So, and then the brain, after smelling tears, it exhibited less activity in the prefrontal cortex and in the left anterior insula, so regions that are associated with aggression and decision-making. So as far as studies go, like, it's pretty well thought out. Sure, it's, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's a small sample, but that is a damn good study of that, especially when you're using an MRI. That's quite a big sample. Like, because, you know, the cost of
an MRI, that's going to mount up.
So, like, fascinating, right?
That's a cool, that is a cool study. What a rogue study as well. But I love that. I love when they're, like, just totally obscure.
But it's like, there's this hypothesis about it, about why it happens and stuff, and you know, within society, like, oh, well, you get into an argument and you just cry. And then, but they do get their way. There's that old stereotype that you're like, you'll cry and then I'll give in, or whatever it might be.
I'd now be interested to know what the difference is between female tears and male tears.
Mm-hmm. Whether it'd be the other way around.
Yeah, like, how would the participants' reaction change based on it being male tears?
Male tears and or whether women's aggression is lowered by male tears as well. The same way. Is this just a thing that happens with tears? You know, is aggression lowered by tears? My understanding is that because they didn't find, they did that test in the mice and found no change the other way around, is my understanding.
So that's why they didn't do it
with the humans, because obviously the cost is massive. But I am not certain on that, so that might be slightly incorrect because I don't have that information.
Fair.
To double check now.
I think it'd be interesting though to kind of look at that now moving forward. You go, hey, we had some pretty like good results. Like, we saw some very clean results here.
Yeah.
Let's look at other kind of variables and see how that pans out.
Well, the study from 2011 on the same thing came out. Look at me now. I'm into the study.
He's reeling off studies.
I'm reeling off study. 2011 study. This was by a university, I can't remember which one, but it was a really reputable, found that female tears turned off men. So they were sort of made men feel less sexually stimulated.
Interesting.
So it both lowers aggression and turns you off.
Fine.
So, so there you go.
Interesting.
Apparently.
Yeah. Interesting.
I did look into the mechanisms of that at the time, and I was like, seems hard to measure.
I'm now imagining the
arousal.
Like, how they did this.
Oh, there's a little pulse there.
There's no MRI involved in this one.
Well, surely you're having to... Maybe you're scanning brain waves again in the same way. I actually can't remember now how they did it. But if it's a questionnaire... sniff it.
Really try and imbue those tears.
Go on, sniff me.
Go on, take it.
Right, you love the NFL.
Correct.
I love rugby.
Yep, it's a shame.
They're not mutually exclusive, right? So we can love both. But what I can tell you is that the Six Nations declared their teams, well, it would have been today, actually. And 2 days ago.
Yes. Oh, I know what you're going to talk about. How does it feel? For him to go to a proper sport.
One of Wales's best international players, Lewis Rees-Zammit, one of the most exciting players that we have, has decided... This has literally never happened. He is the first person to do this from international rugby.
Was it like 2 hours before...
The team was announced.
Yeah.
And the... Like, they didn't know.
No.
So he would have been on the team.
Yeah.
And Warren Gatland is there going, what the hell? We should say, he has decided to... He hasn't retired from rugby. He hasn't quit rugby. He's just said, I'm going to go do the NFL. So he's gone on their sort of player pathway.
Yeah, the international pathway, yeah.
Which is like this sped up way of getting into the NFL for people who are already superlative players in other sports to get in.
Like there was another one, was like Christian Wade. He did the same.
I don't know who that is.
He's a rugby player turned NFL. And he's left NFL now.
Wasn't that rugby league though?
He might have been rugby league.
Because a few people have gone from rugby league, right?
No, rugby union. He was rugby union.
Who the hell is this person? Why don't I know who it is?
Christian Wade. Who did he play for? He played for Wasps.
Oh God.
Yeah. And like he went to the Bills for a bit. He was on their practice squad, and then he did some preseason games. He's in his very first touch in the NFL. This was in a preseason game. But his very first touch, he took it to the house for like 70 odd yards. I think it was. Something crazy.
Wow. And to answer your question on how it feels, it sucks.
65 yards.
It sucks.
Yeah. I'm intrigued to see how he does in the international pathway. I mean, because he's what, 22?
He's young, super speedy.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily young in NFL terms.
No, he's not big.
No.
So he's limited in position choices that he could
get. Oh, he's going to be a receiver. Like, surely. He's going to be a receiver.
He surely has to be, but obviously he can kick the ball incredibly well.
But there is, so like, I know that the NFL have been trying to get players from Aussie rules to come and do kicking, because the kicking in the NFL is terrible.
It is awful. When you watch rugby players kick in American football, they can kick a goal from like 75% of the pitch because it's so easy compared to a rugby ball. Mm. And then you watch the NFL players, you're like, oh wow, you suck at this.
They really do suck. And it's bizarre. Like I listen to a lot of NFL podcasts. And they were like, you have one job. It's not like rugby. Like rugby, you have a multitude of jobs, like as part of being a player.
Yeah.
In NFL, you have a very specific job, particularly if you're a kicker. You have literally one job.
Yeah.
To not be brilliant at it seems insane.
This is literally my issue with the NFL, and I genuinely enjoy watching American football. But that's the thing that doesn't make any sense to me, because it literally then means the people who have the most... I know the draft is an insanely annoying, weird way of getting players, but
it is.
But it doesn't work the way it's intended, because they all find ways around it for the most part. Do you mean to go, oh no, well, we'll trade that to one of the big teams because X, Y, Z. And I'm like, so essentially the people with the most money still get the best players anyway.
No. No, because there's a salary cap in the same way as...
Yeah, which is... Yes, but...
The teams with the best front offices get the best players.
There you go. I would agree with that.
It's like the teams who are the best managed and have the best culture, they pick up the best players. If you're...
Because that's where they want to be.
If you're a garbage team like, I don't know, the Cardinals. Cardinals fans don't come for me. But if you're a garbage team like the Cardinals, like... You're not going to get the best players because your ability to select the right players for your team and your ability to negotiate trades is poor.
Well, but my thing is, when you have one role on the team, you know, the outcome is almost predictable in that you go, well, their defense is objectively better.
Yeah.
Or their attack, because they literally fucking change the people. Inclusion over somebody that can maybe defend 5% better but mm-hmm. attacks 10% worse. Like, then we've got this, for me in my brain, you've got this like almost impossible puzzle of people to go together. You go, you need everybody's skill set to be preposterously high. So when you get somebody who's truly an insane, you know, insanely talented kicker, and you know that that person is also able to tackle an 18 stone prop running towards them and carry the ball and ruck well, mm. like, oh, that's an incredible athlete. Whereas the bloke who comes on just to do the kicks and then goes off again, I'm like, great.
Yeah, we take kickers out of the equation because they are just, in the NFL, they're pointless. They're just pointless. But like, him as a wide receiver could be incredible because, and like, looking at what you've been saying, like, there has to be a balance. Like, a player has to kind of like create their whole identity as a player. In rugby, in NFL, they go, I need to be this thing.
Yeah.
And I can become absolutely elite at this one thing. And you go, if they're training just purely for that one purpose, that's cool. Like, you're going to see some real, like, insane results.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to be a phenomenal wide receiver. I think he could make it. Like, he'll probably never be a number one receiver. Like, he'll probably end up being a number three. Maybe like a slot receiver or something. Although he's rapid, so he could go out wide. He could line up wide.
Here's what I'm going to equate it to. If anybody hates sports and is listening to this, which is probably quite a lot of people. one, sorry. Two, I'm like, let's take a music theatre performer and then go, you're going to train and spend all of your time training leaps.
Yeah.
And you're going to get incredible at leaps. Do I want to watch that person dance? Like, maybe.
Maybe. Do you want to watch that person dance as part of a beautiful ensemble that each person has this these special, like, talents? No,
because every time you'll watch this number and 95% of what you're seeing is garbage. There's just one person who's excellent at that one thing. That makes a terrible show. My argument is that the sport is bad.
No, the sport is elite.
The sport is fantastic to watch, but it's...
truly fantastic.
It's more fun to play.
No, I do not want to play NFL.
Do you not? Have you ever played? You must have played.
No. I mean, I've like thrown a ball around. I've not actually played NFL. I've not played touch football.
It's fantastic. Honestly, it is like, you know, like people who play cricket or watch cricket and you're like, cricket's amazing to watch. Cricket is insanely boring to watch, in my opinion. Cricket is an event that's fun to go to.
It's great to go to. Cricket is great to stick in the background if you want to have a nap.
Great. But it's awesome to play because you're like, this is exciting.
Yeah, it's fun to play, yeah.
But NFL to play or American football to play, real fun. Anyway, we should probably get onto the main content. this episode is not titled NFL versus rugby.
NFL would win.
I suppose this episode is probably quite aggressively titled, isn't it? The problem isn't fat. It's lack of muscle. And that's really the thing we wanted to chat about. Yeah. So there's a bunch of new studies. Let me give you the quote. Shall I give you a quote?
Go on. Hit me with it.
A review in the Cell Journal reveals that the negative health impacts of obesity are not merely due to excess fat, but rather a loss of fat's plasticity, its ability to respond to changes. So this decline leads to health issues such as insulin resistance and inflammation. Now, that's only part of the thing that that study mentions, and there's a whole bunch of other studies that support this ethos now moving forwards, which is essentially as you go through your life, people used to think that it was simply just being fat in some way, either overweight or obese, was the problem. And now we know that's not the case. And actually, you can be perfectly healthy with a relatively high level of body fat as long as you have enough muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And the determining factor as you move forwards in your life in whether you suffer in like strokes in general, overall rate of death, is how much muscle you have. You're less likely to suffer from almost every disease and heart problems, stroke, everything, if you have more muscle. So I'm like, huh. So you can also be overweight. Just make sure that you've got muscle as well. Then you can have whatever body image you want, right? You can go, I'm comfortable as in a bigger size. I'm comfortable, whatever. Just make sure you've got the muscle and strength to back it up. Ideally, you'd be able to perform well to like have your body function. And then you're at considerably less risk of everything. Discuss.
Well, it's fascinating because it's kind of against what's long been the assumed thing, really, isn't it? Like you go for the longest time, like obviously body image stuff aside, like we've looked at obesity as a problem, and it's been looked at as going fat is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like being obese and having a very high body fat percentage has been the problem because of its associated health risks and like, yeah, that's been the kind of the belief. So to suddenly go, hey, actually that's not necessarily true, to go, if you are strong, if you have a lot of muscle mass, that's the fat side is less important. That's like a big kind of wrench in the industry.
It's a shift, right?
Yeah.
And it's not to say that those risks aren't still attributed to that, because it's really hard to separate these in the studies that have previously been done. So currently we still have all the information that goes, oh, you're far more likely to have stroke or heart disease or diabetes and all of these things if you are overweight. But it's not definite if you are obese.
Mm.
This is a factor that it looks like could swing it the other way in going, oh, well, you might be able to sort of counterbalance that risk, that higher risk. So it needs more research to go in, but it is a fascinating possibility that it's not necessarily a certain determining factor that goes, which is why it's confusing. And actually why this, that whole movement about, you know, being healthier and body image stuff, being healthier at what would be called overweight or obese is actually potentially still possible. Of course, you're under more strain. Of course, you have more problems in various other realms that we won't delve into today, but that it is slightly more complicated than people have thought.
Yeah, and I think that is the way to look at it, is it's slightly more complicated. Now, there will be people who will take this and run.
Mm.
And convert it into something that it's not, and say, look, we were right all along. You can be you can be as overweight as you want, and it's not a problem. Like as always with these things, the truth isn't that extreme. The truth is like in the gray, in the middle. So, I think you've got to kind of take all of this stuff with a pinch of salt and go, well, okay, what can we learn from this? We can go, maybe my focus shouldn't necessarily be on dropping my body fat as low as possible. Maybe my focus should be on, getting my body fat to a manageable area, to a decent kind of area. But maybe my focus should be on then building muscle.
Yeah.
So what you could use it for is kind of flipping the narrative on like what your approach should be.
Yeah, and what's your priority? And I really love how you phrased that, because it lines up with what we do with clients of whatever their goal might be. You know, you go, okay, most people come because they either want to build muscle or lose fat. And you go, let's say you want to cut fat. We still want to spend that time building muscle with you so that you can maintain this in a healthy way that's sustainable moving forwards. or you'll just put it back on anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, and like you said, if you can do that in a nice, consistent way that takes you to a healthy place, then you might prioritize building muscle sooner, not only because it helps you to eat more, more muscle, more food.
My God.
More muscle, more food. I'm going to get t-shirts made with that.
I believe you will.
Because more muscle with an apostrophe in it, because it's so true. You can change how much your body can take in. People think I have a fixed amount of calories my body can take. And I'm like, well, that's nonsense. Yeah. Like, also ask any competitive bodybuilder who's gone through prep well, you'll know that some of those women with massive amounts of muscle can be eating a maintenance calories outside of that thing of like 4,000 plus without gaining weight, any weight. Yeah. Like they're not gaining fat, they're not gaining muscle. You're like, okay, well, she's 5'2". How is that possible if your metabolism doesn't change? Like, tell me.
Like, yeah.
Dumb.
Metabolism's another conversation.
Yeah. The episode, metabolism. It's 18 hours long. Is that enough on that? I think it is.
Yeah. I think that's kind of it. It's a really interesting study, and there's definitely stuff you can take away from it. And I think, like you said, it aligns with a lot of what we say, like prioritize that strength training.
Yeah. And go and have a little look at the study if you can be asked. And if not, just take our word for it.
Yeah. Take our word for it that, as always, somewhere in the middle is a lovely place to be.
What's the answer? It depends.
It depends. It always does depend.
I'm so excited to come back to this joke.
Oh, yeah. Cool. God, I'd forgotten about the joke.
What's the difference between light and hard?
I do not know.
I can go to sleep with a light on.
Oh, my God.
If you're just listening to this, Bobby has his head in his hands. He's clutching the bridge of his nose. He's horrified, perhaps mortified.
Dear God.
I'm slightly clutching the arm of my chair, worried about his response. But I'll repeat that. What's the difference between light and hard? I can go to sleep with a light on.
Why would you repeat it?
Because I think it's truly original. Did you see it coming?
I can't even carry on. I can't even carry on with this.
We've had some fairly risque jokes recently.
It's gone actually. Very blue.
I promise I'll give you a less blue joke in the next episode. I might go back on that promise. But
I don't believe you.
If you hated the joke, I'm so sorry. But thank you as always for joining us for an episode of Fit 2 Talk. Don't miss our next guest episode when we're joined by another fantastic guest.
Absolutely. You can find us on social media at Fit2_Talk. As always, if you've got any questions you want answered by us, you know what to do. Get in touch, slide into those DMs. I'll be in there. Adding on some muscle.
Don't forget to leave us that review. And if you like what you've heard, we have been Fit 2 Talk with me, Stefan.
And me, Bobby. And if you didn't like it, we've been Joe Wicks. Peace out.